Thank you, and you're free to send in your questions through your iPhones. The first question is to Dr. Nayak. Can the data from telemedicine, the approach for remote monitoring used for research, what kind of research can be conducted using that?
Hello?
Yes.
I was not very clear of the question.
Can the data from the telemedicine approach for remote monitoring be used for research? If so, what kind of research has been conducted?
It has an option whenever one important thing would be the microbiology of the peritonitis and the exit site that is available in the drop-down chart, the entire all the bacteria, that's number one. So you can know whether the patient is lapsing or recurrent or all those peritonitis. And then the list of all the investigations, the height, weight, all those things are there available. What kind of membrane characteristics. So based on that, basic research can be done because that data is stored in the software.
Thank you. And the second, I think, is a question for Dr. McIntyre. Do exosomes and microvesicles play a role in remote ischemic conditioning?
Yes, a very good question. I think I'm still just checking. I'm going to get feedback now. So we know that the release of endothelially-derived microparticles
is associated with ultrafiltration rate. So we've been studying the generation of those that are tagged with markers to demonstrate that they're from activated endothelium. And so far, we've just used those measures as biomarkers to look for the injury. But as you know, exosomes are very complicated little packets of information, and I think there's an excellent reason to believe that they are communicating at distant sites. We have absolutely no idea whatsoever about what mediates the movement of that protection from one part of the body to the other. There's neurohumeral, humeral elements, but actually very, very little has been nailed down. So we're still at the point we have to believe in magical fairies riding on unicorns of how it happens. The only thing we're certain of is it does happen, and it could easily be microparticles as anything else, but not described yet. We're trying to now crack them open and see what's in them and try and relate that. And we think the animal model is going to give us the high throughput to be able to do that.
Thank you. Again, for Dr. Nayak, is the software used outside of India, and how many patients are using your software tool?
Yeah. We did one study, which we published in PDI. We used the basic software at that time, about 120 patients. We have a busy PD unit, so I have 120 patients were enrolled for the study. It was more observational because they were very early times. It was published in 2012. Now we also had our software was used for a pilot study in by Professor Mitch in Virginia. We are on the verge of starting a dual center study with the Professor David Johnson, who's the president of the ISPD at the Brisbane Princess Alexandra Hospital with our hospital. Meanwhile, our patients are about 20 of them are using this software. The most important thing, apart from the question on research, I mean, it is an evolving, whatever we need, we can adapt to it. So a lot of microbiology, a lot of biochemistry, there are KT overviews, there are membrane characteristics, and a gamut of data is available for the study. Now, for this particular study, we are planning to enroll with the Australian dual center study. 20 patients of ours are already using the software. The moment there are some patients who are taken off PD for some mechanical complications, they really are very upset that they cannot use the software till they are back on PD. So it's a very well accepted and liked a form of a way of keeping in touch with the PD unit.
Thank you. The next question for Dr. McIntyre. It looks like cooled dialysate is beneficial to patients' health. May I know the mechanism?
So the mechanism is not fully derived. There is an increase in peripheral vascular resistance, so it is a bit like a fighter pilot pumping up their G-suits to be able to maintain. It does increase baroreceptor sensitivity, and that's a direct temperature-based effect in the aortic-based ones. We also know that minimal hypothermia also activates a molecular cascade which is identical to that which you see in ischemic preconditioning again. So it's having a sort of a hemodynamic effect, but it's also having an effect on the ischemia tolerability of tissues. And we don't know the relative contributions of those two things.
Okay. Another question. In the attempt to remove sodium, do you alter the sodium bath at all when using the large pore dialyzer? Do you dialyze against lower sodium baths?
So at the moment, we don't, and that's largely due to the fact that we're part of the ongoing multinational RCT that's comparing two different dialysate sodiums on a cluster randomized basis. So we're part of Resolve. So we're having to sort of jimmy ourselves in to those realities. I think there may be issues with going too low, depending on that degree of sodium permeability, but those are still quite preliminary findings. I think it's probably more important to be thinking about the individualization of sodium than it is about the exact number. And it's astonishing we've been dialyzing for as long as we have, and we have so little idea about what to do with dialyzate sodium. We are combining the MRI technique now for sodium with dialysis during, and then we're hoping to then directly visualize movement of sodium with differing dialysate choices and use that as an imaging surrogate to try and find a way forward about which ones we should be testing in larger trials. So I don't really know. There's an answer in there somewhere. I'm sort of groping around for it at the moment.
Where do you think the sodium is located? Do you think it's in intracellular glycosaminoglycans?
Yeah, so in the skin, it seems to be largely associated with those. And skin, it seems to move quickest. So in terms of depurating, skin's fastest, muscle's next, bone's the longest one. Muscle, it is described as being predominantly intracellular. But when we've been looking at the proton images of the legs of people with worsening renal function, the quality of skeletal muscle gets appalling. And there's actually huge amounts of collagenous material that's now appearing. So I think that may be true in health, but actually there is ample proteoglycan available in ratty, scratty, uremic skeletal muscle. And then bone, it's getting locked in, you know, virtually as salts. And that's certainly the slowest one to move.
Dr. Nayak, have you considered making modifications for people who can't read?
No, that's more important than that would be translating into different languages. So that's the first thing we are trying to do. It does not need that the patient who is performing the exchange needs to be able to read. The caregiver or even a neighbor or a friend, they can phone him in, and that person can come and do the exchange if language is a problem. Even if the patient is diabetic with the diabetic retinopathy and blindness, the daughter or the son can help and do the interaction. So there's actually no need, but it can be easily made. I'm sure. I'm not sure how to do it, but the caregiver is the person who's going to do the exchange. I mean the interaction.
It doesn't solve the problem of people who won't do what they're told, unfortunately, but...
Yes. Dr. Kuhlman, what is your experience in the use of PD in patients with ventricular assist device?
Well, actually, I don't personally have experience with patient with left ventricular assist device. Maybe, you know, if you know they have, that's last in the cascade of treatment of congestive heart failure. This was is almost at the bottom, and so if these patients still have volume problems, I would probably try to use PD. I would assume that these patients have a low GFR. Otherwise, they would probably be able to compensate. But I would use PD. But I have no personal experience with that.
I have a massive personal experience of two patients.
Okay.
And they were both absolute disasters. And they ended up in a vicious cycle of driveline infection and peritonitis.
Okay.
As soon as we tried to clear it. And looking at them, we thought that was really a very extreme extension of the poor outcomes associated with implantable devices and the very high rate of pocket infections.
Yes, yes, yes.
So I think you're absolutely right in terms of the indication, but in practical terms,
it was
very challenging.
Hey, Dr. McIntyre, does hemodiafiltration have an effect on total body sodium?
It's another very good and very nuanced question because it's so heavily dependent on what you're doing with the replacement fluid. So that answer would be different to small bags, low volume, to choices that were being made with very high volumes of exchange. And I don't know the exact answer, but I would imagine there's a very wide range of removals. HDF should have the ability to be a very efficient way to depurate sodium, but it would have to be with careful attention to what those reinfusions were.
May I ask a question, maybe, George?
Yes.
Yeah. Chris, I think your presentation, if I would not have been a dialysis doctor, I would have said, well, dialysis is something, you know, you couldn't do. You know, save the brain of any patient. And if I would consider myself being at the FDA, I would say, you know, this treatment is more than dangerous. On the other hand, you know, as a nephrologist, I know patients who have been on dialysis for 20, 30, 40 years and undergoing this, well, three times a week stress for the brain. How do we explain?
How does anybody survive it?
Yes, right.
Yeah.
You know, because I think when everybody listened, you know, you thought your data make you feel, you know, the brain is dying with any treatment.
Yeah.
So what is the...
We've all got those patients, haven't we, who've
right.
survived through everything.
Yes.
And I can't help feeling they might be the fact...
And feeling well.
Yeah. But I can't help feeling that we hold on to those patients like we all know a caring uncle who smoked 80 cigarettes a day and lived to be 90 years old. You know, it happens. And we also talk about, well, what can we learn from those excursions that we can apply elsewhere, but I have a horrible feeling they're not even carbon-based life forms.
Mm.
There are just some freakazoids who, no matter what we do, we can't kill them. And God knows we try. I think they're like those people who walk around with systolics of 70 on hemodialysis and tolerating it. Somehow they've retained the ability to maintain flow despite very challenged pressure, and I don't know what it is that makes those people the same. But I think that would be the core issue. Somehow, there's some degree of vasoreactivity that is just never got rid of, and that preserves those vital circulations.
Mm. One other question when you talk about the preconditioning. Isn't a dialysis treatment itself a preconditioning?
And I think that's the reason why they don't all die. I think you know that phenomenon is protecting as well as hurting, and this is competing risk, and then what we see is the composite from the protection with one given the stress from the other. Because I think you're right. If you took anyone normal on it and you gave them a clear run at it, we've looked at stunning in people with acute kidney injury, so no history of CKD at all, and they all stun horribly, just as badly.
Yeah, I know.
Dr. Nayak, you had a question?
No, you go ahead.
I don't know that this is relevant to the talk, but Dr. McIntyre, does the use of HIF inhibitors protect brain ischemic injury as well?
I have no idea.
I have
nice
no
question.
Idea either.
Yes. Well, that's a nice question.
It's a very nice question,
Because hypoxia-induced factor, this is something like a heat shock, protein. This is a kind of protective mechanism. So maybe interesting.
And this is where we are our own worst enemies, aren't we? Because most nephrologists, about everyone in this room, are really pretty smart and have a really good understanding of all the different mechanisms. And we can convince ourselves of almost anything in the absence of data, up or down. But I have no idea.
You have to wait for experimental data to come out of those agents.
Yeah, interesting question.
Regarding cardiac stunning and hemodynamics, multisystemic hyperperfusion changes, are there any data regarding the impact on cardiovascular and brain injuries in AKI and dialysis patients?
Yeah, so as I say, we've done one study which used intermittent dialysis, and they still stunned. And we've just accepted for publication another study where we actually used CRRT, because theoretically the slower ultrafiltration rates, we thought maybe we don't see it with that, but actually we see it with that as well. Now, that's not a randomized comparison. I can't tell you that actually it was better than intermittent treatment, but certainly it has the full capacity to also get cardiac injury. Nobody's looked at the brains at all at the moment, and that's partially the challenge of combining appropriate imaging. We're now just starting a cooling study for CRRT, and we're including transcranial Doppler in that study to see if there's any kind of a signal.
Thank you. Dr. Kuhlman, any comment on preservation of residual renal function when patients on PD for cardiac failure are compared to no PD?
Well, we have seen the one data I showed you on this study in the German, they showed that GFR decreased, although they did PD over 24 months. I always assume that, of course, PD is a way to better maintain residual renal function because the body has enough fluid to excrete and stimulate diuresis. But on the other hand, here we are trying to ultrafiltrate, and any ultrafiltration probably may be some stress for the kidney, right? So I would not expect that you preserve it longer than like forever, let's say that. What can I compare it with?
I think you're exactly right identifying the dialysate sodium is potentially being really important. So there's a study just published by Jeff Tostani from Yale in a pig model where they looked at using 0% and had very, very effective recovery of the heart. And Fred has done a pilot bit in PD patients, just 10 of them, comparing the sodium removal with a standard high glucose exchange against 0%. Mm. So you get about a gram of sodium, or 50 millimoles, in the first 2 hours with glucose. You get 5 grams with zero glucose. So I think the question is maybe there might be ways of having, in the same way that you had adapted PD, they could maybe have an intermittent, very low sodium exchange built into there and achieve what they're trying to achieve with the complexity.
Absolutely. I think it would be easier, and I think it is a complex treatment, so we have to find a way to make it doable in every patient.
So we're combining into hemo patients now with 0% and actually using 10% dextrose as the proof of principle fluid.
In our series, I'm not talking only heart failure, but at least about 70% of those who had a definite history of acute on chronic CKD lining up have recovered with PD, and I would have expected much lower percentage of hemodialysis patients recovering if they are put on HD. I think reducing the blood flow would be another maneuver you could do to reduce cardiac stunning.
Yeah. Well, certainly the loss of residual renal function is less with PD than it is with hemodialysis.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dr. Kuhlman, is there a specific PD regimen that you recommend or have you seen commonly in patients with diuretic-resistant chronic kidney disease?
Well, chronic kidney disease, as I pointed out, you know, you can have the CKD4, like GFR of 20, as we did with our patient. I think this is considered a quite successful treatment at the moment. Single icodextrin, maybe double icodextrin, so two icodextrin treatments over 24 hours. You remove sodium, you remove water. So this is the way to start with, I think. But what about patients with CKD5, GFR of less than 8 or 7, I think then we have to combine icodextrin and try to use APD or just stay with CAPD. CAPD, you know, with a longer dwell time, gives at the moment, with what we are able to use, better removal of sodium. Wouldn't you agree?
No.
Yes. But CAPD to me always means 24 hours dialysate and intra-abdominal.
Dr. McIntyre, I think that's our last question. Is hemodialysis effective? Is hemodiafiltration in clearing sodium?
Conventional hemodialysis with conventional high-flux dialysis is not as efficient. The mid-cutoff dialysis, in terms of middle neck clearance, it appears to be at least equivalent to HDF, and in the higher sizes, possibly a little bit superior. But there are very few of these membranes available at the moment, and our experience is very limited.
Thank you, and thank you all. Time's up for this session.
Thank you.